Secretary of State John Kerry is calling for the immediate creation of a no-fly zone in Syria after Monday's deadly attack on a UN humanitarian aid convoy. Mr. Kerry told the United Nations it's the only remaining option in a bid to breathe new life into a failed ceasefire in Syria. Our U.S. correspondent Simon Marks reports.
A grim-faced John Kerry told the UN Syria needs a no-fly zone and needs it now.
We must move forward to try to immediately ground all aircraft flying in those key areas in order to de-escalate the situation.
That's a turnaround for the Obama administration, which resisted earlier calls for planes to be grounded. But with Moscow and Washington trading accusations over Monday's attack, the U.S. thinks it's the last chance to halt Syria's slide back into violence.
Meanwhile, Britain's Foreign Secretary Boris Johnson says there's strong evidence that Russia carried out the deadly attack. He also accused Russia and Syria's President Bashar al-Assad of hampering the chances of a ceasefire. U.S. defense officials have previously said there's strong evidence that Russian planes carried out the strike on the UN convoy. However, Mr. Johnson is one of the first officials to speak publicly. He added that attempts to revive the ceasefire must continue.
We know that the overwhelming responsibility for the failure to have a ceasefire, the overwhelming responsibility for the breaches in the ceasefire that we have seen, lies with the Assad regime and indeed its sponsors. So I think that's where we want to see some progress, but we shouldn't give up. Yes, I think the whole Kerry Lavrov process is in a pretty critical state, but it is not yet terminal.
Black leaders in the U.S. city of Charlotte, North Carolina, are calling for an economic boycott on their own city after the latest police shooting incident. Protests erupted overnight following the death of Keith Lamont Scott. Tensions have also increased nationwide following another shooting this week in the state of Oklahoma. Daniel Wrenches has this report.
The family of Keith Lamont Scott says he was sitting in his car reading a book when approached by officers and shot to death. The city's police chief says he was holding a gun and ignored repeated warnings to drop it. Following a night of violent protests in the city, Nation of Islam local representative B.J. Murphy says the issue of police shootings is not being addressed.
What we're calling for is an economic boycott of the whole city of Charlotte. Since black lives do not matter for this city, then our black dollar shouldn't matter.
The incident follows the shooting to death of Terrence Crutcher in Oklahoma, in which video footage appears to show he posed no threat to police.
From bureaus worldwide, this is FSN.
So Kerry wants a no-fly zone in Syria, eh? Well, that worked out well in Libya, didn't it? All of this is very predictable, of course. Talk about it briefly in a couple of minutes' time. Today is Wednesday, September 21st, 2016. My name is Richie Allen. Hope you've had a lovely day and you're looking forward to this program. Let's do it.
Broadcasting live from the great city of Manchester, England. This is the Richie Allen Show on DavidIke.com. The Richie Allen Show, brought to you in association with DavidIke.com. And now, live from Manchester, England, here is Richie Allen.
Well, Sean McDonald asks on Twitter, just the thought, Richie, the white helmets, did they plant bombs on the convoy of aid? Well, they might well have done, I don't know. Good question, that. Welcome to the programme. The Twitter handle for me is at Richie Allen Show. That's how to reach me. Or you can email richie@richieallen.co.uk. Always good to be with you. Thanks for choosing the programme. We've got an extraordinary one coming up over the next couple of hours. Mentioned this over the last few days. John Captain III joins me for pretty much most of the programme. He's our guest tonight. His girlfriend, Tiffany Jenks, was murdered in October 2013, the police in Portland, Oregon would tell you she didn't know her killers, she'd only just met them outside a nightclub. She went off with them and she was murdered, but she knew them and she knew, or they knew her and they knew her family. Why would the police cover that up? Well, why they covered it up, that in itself is extraordinary. John Captain joins the programme this hour. Now, he went to see David Icke on the Isle of Wight, did John? He didn't. He went to see David in New Zealand, excuse me, when David was down there as part of the Worldwide Wake Up Tour. He shared his story with David, gave him all the documentation and the video evidence while he was there. David said, get in touch with Richie. John came to Manchester this week and met with me. I think he's now left the country. He's going to be talking to us via Skype link. And I can't overstate how incredible it is what has happened to this woman and to John Captain himself. So all of that coming up in a few minutes' time. We're broadcasting, of course, live on Alternate Current Radio, as usual, on fabradiointernational.com, davidicke.com, and the TuneIn app and my own website. Now, again, David is in San Francisco for the final leg of this visit to the United States. He's in San Francisco. All the details, venue, tickets, everything, go to davidicke.com or to the worldwidewakeup.com. He's having a great time in the United States. He's meeting some fascinating people and he's having some wonderful conversations. He's in great health and he's in fine fettle. So just a couple of quick things then before we get John on the programme. You heard there in the news, Rebecca Foster said that US Secretary of State John Kerry wants planes to be grounded, wants a no-fly zone, has said that Syria is hanging by a thread. They've blamed Russia, as you know, for the attack on the convoy, which killed 20 civilians. This is the United Nations convoy. And Kerry said that this raised profound doubt over whether Russia and Syria would live up to the terms of the ceasefire deal. Now, I mentioned today on my Facebook page that I believe all manner of backroom meetings are going on in the United Nations building in New York at the moment. What Theresa May, John Kerry, Obama and Boris Johnson want is they want to secure, well, support for a ground invasion of Syria beyond the no-fly zone that they're talking about today. But it's my belief that they won't get very far with that. Not like in the past when they persuaded Palau and some of the other smallest countries in the world to join in the invasion of Iraq. This is deadly serious stuff. Here's Kerry today speaking at the UN about what he said is the fragile Syrian ceasefire. Fragile. It's been violated. What did the Russians say? 200 times by the United States alone. Listen.
Yes, the coalition did hit people on Saturday. We did. A terrible accident. And within moments of it happening, we acknowledged it. We didn't put out a bunch of obfuscating facts. We said, yeah, it's a terrible thing. It happened. Defense Department apologized, and we tried to find out how that happened. But I got to tell you, people running around with guns on the ground from the air is a very different thing from trucks in a convoy with big UN markings all over them. Now, I'm saying this, and I want to lay out these facts because it underscores why, at this moment, we just can't do business as usual. We can't walk out of this room and say, okay, we're going to, you know, try to continue, or we'll have a ceasefire that everybody knows can't work. The facts require countries to restore credibility to this process. That's what's critical. And just think about what happened in the last couple of days. First, President Putin's press secretary, Dmitry Peskov, claims that the attack on the humanitarian convoy was somehow a necessary response to an alleged offensive by al-Nusra elsewhere in the country. That's the first claim. Then a Russian ambassador said that Russia and Syrian forces were not bombing the area, but they were targeting Khan Tuman. Then we heard a completely different story. The defense ministry said that the aid convoy had been accompanied by militants in a pickup truck with a mortar. We've seen no evidence of that. But that, in any case, would not justify a violation of the cessation of hostilities.
We've seen no evidence of that, said Kerry, even though the Russians provided documentary evidence of that in the form of a video. What's really interesting is when you go to the BBC's news page or news website, bbc.co.uk/news, there are a series of stories about this, these comments by Kerry, but underneath those stories are stories about Syria, including a story, what's left of Syria after 5 years of war. Well, over 7 million people have left the country. Hundreds of thousands of people are dead. And they want to put a no-fly zone in there so that they can go in there and lay waste to Syria. That's what it's all about. Enforce a no-fly zone over the country so that your planes can go in and absolutely destroy what's left of that country. And it's happening in front of our eyes. And as Paul Craig Roberts said on this programme last night, we do not have a media. And many times have I said it on this show, the media in this country, in the United States, in Ireland, in Greece, in Spain, in South America, is a clear and present danger to our liberty, to our well-being, to our health and to our happiness. They enable this tyranny. Staggering stuff. I'm going to leave that there. There's nothing new to add to any of that. Other than I'm sure the Russians will respond at some stage today, tonight or tomorrow. Extraordinary stuff. It's exactly 11 and a half minutes past the hour. This is Wednesday's Richie Allen Show in association with davidicke.com. Going to take a very quick break now. When I come back, we'll be chatting with none other than John Captain, whose girlfriend Tiffany Jenks was murdered in Portland, Oregon in 2013. The circumstances around the murder, absolutely bizarre.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
Right, welcome back to the programme. My advertisement for Kim Hutchison and livingasyoursoul.com has just disappeared on me, I'll deal with that. Right, going to take some music. This is Firestone from Kygo. When we come back from this, John Captain is going to be with me. This is an extraordinary story about a murder that happened in Portland, Oregon in 2013. Of a woman called Tiffany Jenks. It's a police cover-up story. It's a story of mind control, of insider trading. I don't think you'll ever have heard anything like it. John Captain joins me in exactly 2 minutes' time. Don't go anywhere.
Take me higher. There's one not far from here.
Right, that's Kygo and Firestone on the Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com. You're welcome to it. It's Wednesday, September 21st, 2016. It's exactly 15 minutes past the hour, wherever you happen to be in the world listening to this. Now, I've been doing this for a long time. I've had a couple of breaks, but pretty much I've been doing this since I turned 22 years old. I'm now 41. I've heard a lot of things over the years from a lot of people, but nothing quite like the story I was told by our next guest, our only guest today, when I met with him in Manchester on Monday. Back in 2013, his girlfriend Tiffany Jenks was shot to death by Daniel Brunel in the small hours of the morning near Fairview, Oregon. The police contended, and it played out in the trial, that Tiffany had just met with Brunel and two of his friends, Michelle Warden-Brosey and Joshua Robinette. The police concluded that having met the three for the very first time outside a club, Tiffany got into the car with them, their car, and was later murdered by Daniel Brunel, shot to death by him. He was sentenced to 18 years in prison. He's still there. His accomplices, Michelle Warden-Brosey and Joshua Robinette, are already out on parole because they did a deal with the prosecution. Now, my guest went to see David Icke in New Zealand a few weeks ago, tracked David down and told him this story, presented him with evidence to back it up. David got in touch with me and said, "Rich, got an incredible story here. This gentleman seems to be telling the truth. I've seen the documentary evidence he's shown me. And at the very least, before we get into why there's a cover-up, at the very least, the Portland police seem to have covered up the murder of his girlfriend." Let's welcome to the programme John Captain III. John, delighted that you're on the show. Great to meet you on Monday. And thanks for coming on the show with us today. How are you, my friend?
I'm good, Richie. Thank you for having Tiffany's story on your show here.
Wasn't lying when I said in 19 years of doing this off and on, I've not heard many stories or really any stories like this. I understand you're not in Manchester anymore. I'm not going to ask you to say where you are, because I believe, having read this and spent the last 2 days listening to audio tapes and reading documents, I believe you're a guy who's genuinely in serious danger. Now, we spoke about this on Monday, so I'm not going to ask you where you are, because I don't think it matters. It certainly doesn't matter to our audience. Who was Tiffany Jenks, John? Tell us about her. Tell us about her. Tell us about how you got to meet her, how you became romantically involved with her. What sort of a person was she?
Okay, well, first of all, I'd say that Tiffany kind of stumbled into meeting me because she was at a rental house that I own in Portland, Oregon, which is also connected to my office for my business, of which that I've had for approximately 23 years now. So I had met Tiffany through the person that rented the home from me one day, and we hit it off, and she kind of never left. and she fell in love, and I fell in love with her. Along the way, in that relationship, there were many things that were odd to me, and some of them just something I wasn't willing to deal with, which was her alcohol. Unfortunately, she drank, and when she drank, she liked to yell, and so that caused us a bit of an issue. But through that, a lot of her yelling, looking back now, and a lot of her words were right in line with what she was trying to communicate to me that I had zero clue about, of which we'll get into that part later. But clearly, she had some issues, but I really had the issue, because I didn't understand a word she was saying.
You didn't understand a word. You thought she has a drink problem, and she says, sometimes she says nasty things, and she gets upset when she's drunk, and you didn't think any more of that. Now, at this point, I want you to tell our listeners what Tiffany did for a living, because this is central. I believe this is central to her story and your story. When you met her, she had left a job, but it was a very high-profile job. What was it, John?
Yeah, Tiffany was a scientist, and her employer was the Bonneville Power Administration, of which they operate 21 dams on the Columbia River, the river that comes from Canada through America. The 21 dams, the Bonneville Dam, Grand Coulee Dam, I mean, 21 of the most major dams in America. And what I learned later, long after the relationship, was the key to why it matters what job she had.
And we're going to get to that now in due course. And I want to remind you, and I'm not patronizing you, you're a very bright man. I met you on Monday. You're a successful man. But I just want to remind you, you have all the time you need here. So we don't need to rush through anything. I want our listeners to get every facet of this story. So she had this really prestigious job. She was obviously very bright. The company was in charge of 21 dams on the Columbia River. She was basically in control of that. She was at the top and doing that. Now, when, presumably, John, when you were getting to know Tiffany and you were falling in love with one another, we're all curious, aren't we, about our partners and what they used to do and who they used to be with. I'd imagine that you'd have said, wow, Tiffany, that's a really serious job. Why did you leave it? Why are you not there anymore? Why wasn't she? Why did she leave the job?
Well, clearly she had a drinking problem, but that was not why. This is what's really weird about it, and it's hard to get. Tiffany was trying to tell me over and over, it's not about drinking, John. And of course, if you have a partner that drinks and they say that to you, you're always going to come back with, then stop drinking. But what's really odd about this situation is Tiffany told me over and over, John, it's not about drinking. You have no idea who I am. And when you find out, I'm afraid of what will ensue. And so looking back, she drank so she didn't have to work at the dams under the situation that we're going to discuss as we go along.
Now, you had occasional difficulties together because of her drinking and her behavior. Was there ever a time, John, when that peaked? Were there any incidences where that you can remember where it was heightened, when it was really bad? And, you know, maybe some really bad things were said. Go on.
Yeah, one in particular. We had broken up right before she died, and she had one of my cell phones and was getting copies of all my texts to another person. And Tiffany decided she was going to break in that day. And she came in. She was pretty funny. She came in up over the roof and got into my store, and then proceeded to call 911. But she didn't stick around. She ran out the front door and the police came wondering what the problem was. And I said, well, Tiffany's drinking, and she left. And Officer Higginbotham of the Portland Police was very kind. In fact, after she died, he came back and, you know, apologized that he had told me that she can't be there anymore. But I think the important part of that particular incident was that in the police report after the murder, they said that Tiffany was the respondent in a 911 call against me. And I said, well, that's weird, because the police officer that showed up there said he never met Tiffany. So how is it that they had all this information and whatnot? But I had later talked to him on the phone, which was about 6 months ago, and he told me that he was told not to help me in this situation by his superiors. But to answer your question, yes, Tiffany and me had a few issues, and certainly they were all centered around drinking. One incident that was quite odd too, prior to her murder, was that I took her to treatment, and when I went back to see her, she was worse than when I took her to treatment. So I had to go around with the doctors telling them that, listen, we're about ready to go on vacation, and if you give her one more pill of any kind, she can't go. So those were the two incidences where we had, you know, a little bit of issue.
Well, yeah, and I don't want to get too personal with that, John. I'm not looking for the gory details.
Sure.
But I'm just building a picture for our listeners. Now, she was in therapy, and that's really important, and we're going to talk about that, because that's also very, very, very interesting what was going on in therapy.
Sure.
I want to ask you about, did you get to know Tiffany's family? I know she has a sister, and both her parents are alive, or at least they were alive at the time of her murder. Did you get to know them, John? And importantly, what sort of relationship did Tiffany have with them?
Well, first of all, I'd say this. Tiffany's father had passed away in 2010, so you're a little wrong on that.
Oh, of course. Yeah, excuse me. Yeah,
and
yeah,
I had no relationship with them. They live 5 hours away. And it was clear that they had, in my opinion, becomes clear later as after the murder, but that they had an agenda for Tiffany, which we'll cover. But no, I did not have a relationship with her family at all, although I did encourage Tiffany on a regular basis to see her mother. I said, hey, Tiffany, did you call your mom today? And that sort of thing. But no, I didn't know any of them. Her sister came by twice, but that was only for a moment. And as far as Tiffany's relationship was, she wasn't allowed home, which is weird. And also...
they didn't want to see her, and forgive me about her dad. I've read the notes 20 times. Of course her dad died in 2010. Forgive me for that. Her mother and sister, her mother didn't want her to visit. If there was going to be any contact, it was going to come from, well, we'll come and see you, but you're not to come to the family home. Did Tiffany ever explain that, John, why that was the case?
No, but when she did go there, they called the police on her and had her put in jail for a month illegally, but mind you, because you can't just call the police and tell, you know, hey, go arrest this person because she's drinking, even though she was not supposed to drink.
Was there a restraining order taken out by her mother, maybe?
No, I don't think the relationship was that estranged. But one thing that nobody went to see her in jail, except for one time her mother showed up there to take her shoes finally. And that's when her mother told her to get over her rapes, which I found very offensive.
Get over your rapes.
Correct.
Now you would have been
cried about that for 2 days on the phone with me from jail.
Right. And of course you would have been asking Tiffany, what's this about? Were you raped? Were you assaulted?
I knew because this was in December when she was in jail through Christmas and the holidays, because she went to their home for Christmas and she drank. So she was at a hotel. They called the police on her and the police went there to arrest her because she wasn't supposed to drink. Now, I get the idea that someone might conclude that that's some form of tough love. But I will say that they did not go see her. They did not put even a $20 bill on her books. And for the 30 days she was there, when she got out, she had to walk.
She had to walk. Now, we're going to move swiftly into the events leading up to her murder and her murder. We're going to do that very shortly. But I'm just building a picture of this incredibly bright woman, undoubtedly qualified woman, who had this drinking problem and, you know, was estranged from her mother and her sister. You had a relationship with her. There were times when there were problems with her alcohol, but by and large, it was a loving relationship. I just want to ask, John, what did this really bright, articulate, intelligent woman do when she wasn't in therapy? I mean, she left her job. What did she do to keep busy?
Well, we had a business to run, so we did that, and we went on vacations. We went to the flea markets. We went to eat, and we went to the park, and we did, I have an office where I have a, you know, sound system and DJ system. So we had quite a bit of fun together, and but she was retired for the most part. She was getting Social Security.
Right, okay. young and all as she was, because she was so young at the time. Now, this is important. I just want to do a quick recap for our listeners. I'm speaking with John Captain III. John's a businessman, an entrepreneur, and he contacted David Icke, who in turn contacted me, about the story of the murder of his girlfriend, Tiffany Jenks. We've been talking about Tiffany, who she was, the incredibly high-powered and very serious and very prestigious job that she had in charge of 21 dams on the Columbia River. We've been talking about that. We're going to talk about her murder now shortly. This is incredible, folks. If you've got questions or comments you want me to put to John, tweet them to @RichieAllenShow, email richie@richieallen.co.uk. This is going to start getting very strange, but bear with us, because it's vital that you hear this and that you understand it. She, John, whether she had a drink or whether she didn't have a drink, whether she was drunk or whether she was sober, she, at some stage in your relationship, she began to express to you concern that there were some people after her, right?
To some extent, yes. She was alluding that there was a bigger picture that I didn't understand all along, or towards the end of the relationship mostly. But she was communicating to me that I'm never going to see you again, you know, especially right towards the end, emails that said, like, for instance, I have my bags, I'll see you at 9 o'clock, and then telling me that she's going to die. Now, I thought she meant from drinking when she originally said those things to me. I had no clue that she would actually end up being killed. But certainly along the way, the last 30 days, it was clear to me that she knew she was going, her life was going to end to her.
And she even wrote that, didn't she? She wrote
Correct.
It. She and there's a number of incidences where Tiffany is saying that, you know, my life is in serious danger here. I'm going to be killed. Unbelievable stuff, this. Let's talk about the day that she was murdered, John. Let's talk about that particular day. What happened that day? Tell us from the top, from the beginning till the end, till when you found out that she'd been murdered. Tell us what happened.
Well, backing up just a little bit, the night before, which was October 7th, Tiffany had come to my home, and as if like a setup, I basically what it was. But I didn't know. I thought she was just there because she loved me. And so we talked, and she began to cry, and this video is on the website too, by the way, on the Facebook. But she began to say, "I'm not going to die tonight. I'm not going to die tonight. I'm not going to die tonight," three times. Now, she left my home there, and she left to go to the bar. And this is where it's crazy, because the police claim all kinds of things. But let me just say what really happened. And then when people do their own research, they'll realize what was the difference. Tiffany was outside the bar, smoking by herself at 1:43 a.m. That's a fact. And at that point, the other people, the other three killers, co-killers, came up to her, and the police claim that she met them for the first time because they all shook hands. Now, in the police report in front of me right here, it says, "We could tell by the video she met them for the first time." Well, I don't know what a video would show unless they're walking in on their hands, but meeting for the first time is not determined by shaking hands, of course. But they use that as some lame excuse as to say that therefore there will not be a conspiracy. Although she did tell me she was going to die, she did tell the bartender she was going to die, and later I would find out she had told her therapist she was going to die that night. So clearly she knew she was in trouble and she was going to die. I thought she meant from drinking, but I did try to convince her to stay at my house that night, but she left. And so she was at the bar with those three people. So the four of them at 2:11 a.m. from outside, now they never went to one bar, mind you, they all four drive away at 2:11 a.m. And at 2:30, she's dead. So what gets put out there in the media, which is so frustrating, is they make it sound like they go driving around, like they make it sound like they go bar hopping, they're all partying. No. She met them at 1:43. They drove away at 2:11. And 19 minutes later, she was dead.
Now, this is really, really important. It's really important we establish this timeline here. Zay said at 1:43, she encounters these three people. She's never met them before. Shakes hands with them. They have a conversation. A short time later, Tiffany accompanies them to a car. And we know that she was shot dead at 2:30. But explain to our listeners how the police spun a story that they didn't, that Tiffany wasn't murdered so shortly afterwards. Explain how they spun a story that they went off on a kind of a tour in the car. Explain that, John.
Well, first of all, it became clear early on that they were lying, because every single thing the police said was a lie. For instance, the police said they shook hands as if meeting for the first time. And that does not mean you met for the first time in any country in the world. So here we have them lying up front. Now, nobody ever saw the video of Tiffany with them meeting for the first time. And nobody cared that I had video showing the killers going around my store all night. But from the bar, the police said that they went driving around. Now, if she died at 2:30 and they left at 2:11, that 19-minute period, and it's a 16-minute drive, it left no room at all for this story that the police tell. But what they were trying to do was say that the killers got so mad at Tiffany that they had no other choice but to shoot her in that 19-minute period. But since that didn't sound too good for the media and for the police and the public, they thought, well, let's just say that they went driving around. Let's say they went to a remote location. And let's just say that Tiffany told them to shoot her, so they shot her. And, you know, the bottom – oh, by the way, and so they drive to this remote location, according to the police, which it wasn't. There's houses down both sides. They heard the gun go off at 2:30. So they drive to this remote location in this car with Tiffany, and depending on which story you follow, they did not. They get out of the car and shoot her, but the two people, the Michelle Warden-Brosey and Joshua Robinette, they didn't hear the gun go off at all. In fact, when they drove the car to go leave the location where they killed Tiffany, they didn't even know Tiffany wasn't in the car. But they did take the killer to the bus stop the next day, or the same day, rather. And then they drove off to change their hair color and change their cell phones. But all that's unrelated to the murder, according to the police.
Let's just back up there a minute and remind our listeners who these people are and how. Now, let's think for a minute, John. Let's think official story. Let's think about what the police said. These people, Joshua Robinette or Robinette, Michelle Warden-Brosey and Daniel Brunel or Brinell, however it's pronounced, how did these people end up in Oregon? What did they say, the police? How did these people end up? Because none of them are from Oregon. Brunel was from California, wasn't he?
Yes. He and Josh were in California, and the story goes that Josh was going to marry Michelle, and they were going to sell this gun that they had in Oregon to Dan, who's with them in California. So Josh and Dan are in California, and they're going to take a bus up to Oregon so that Daniel Brunel can buy a gun. And with that money, Josh is going to get married to Michelle. That's the story they tell. So Michelle, who's in Washington State, which is just up above Oregon there, Michelle, she drives down from Oregon with her daughter, leaves her daughter in the hotel room, and goes to meet the Josh and Daniel Brunel, and the three of them get in the car together and go to meet Michelle, go to meet Tiffany at the bar that night. But as you follow the timeline, everything would have to be the most amazing thing in the entire world for the numbers to work out, because magically these people went to the bar same time Tiffany did. Magically they went outside the same time Tiffany did. Magically that Tiffany didn't know them, they claimed, that way they didn't get conspiracy charges. And by the way, magically they had a gun that they took the serial numbers off the same day they killed her.
Now this is amazing. Hold that thought. So Michelle and Joshua are getting married.
Yeah, with the money from the gun.
They're going to sell this gun to Daniel. With the money they get from the sale of the gun, they're going to get married.
Yeah.
A motel room is rented. Michelle has a daughter. She's basically abandoned in the motel room, and they go off on this, what they say was a bachelor's party, which, knowing what we know now, is complete nonsense. And they ended up in Falco's Pub and the Mystic Strip Club in southeast Portland around midnight, and an hour and a half later they end up meeting Tiffany. Now remember, dear listener, the authorities in Portland, Oregon maintain to this day, and this is seriously important, we've got some audio to play shortly, they maintain that Tiffany Jenks never knew these people. So these people just came into her life out of the blue. They met while she was having a cigarette, they had a chat, and they went off in a car. This is seriously important. It's also important at this point to remember that there's a young girl involved, the daughter of one of the killers. She's in a motel on her own while all this is going on. We'll come back to her a little bit later on. When did you find out, John? And I know this is tough for you. And I say I know it, even though it never happened to me, but I can imagine. When did you find out that she'd been killed?
Well, a place where I ate breakfast every morning, the waitress called me on the phone on October 9th. And she asked me, John, have you seen Tiffany? And I said, why? Why do you ask? And she said, well, I'm at the bar and she was here last night and all the bar staff are really worried about her. And so as that girl, Mercedes, was checking her iPad or texting Tiffany or something at that same time, I was and then she also said that there had been a murder in Blue Lake Park, which is a park in near Portland, Oregon, in Fairview, Oregon, about, you know, 10 miles from Portland. But so basically she was alluding to the idea that Tiffany could have been the one. So when I went to Google and typed it in, and then it all came together because the girl told me it was on Tiffany's Facebook page that she had been killed. It said, rest in peace. So I proceeded to dial the number on the computer, on the phone. And I was totally freaking out, of course, and distraught. And I didn't even know what was going on. But I called the police and told them, you know, that Tiffany's my girlfriend. And then I joined the other girl on the phone with us. But I was the one to call the police. And the only reason why I say it matters about that is because they never said that I called the police. They said somebody else did. So they did everything they could to make sure that I didn't end up in court to tell my side of the story.
This is really important as well, folks. Mark this, okay? They tried to write John out of this story, the police. They tried to write him out of Tiffany's life. They didn't acknowledge phone calls made on the morning that she died from John. All because, as you'll find out shortly, that when it came to court, they didn't want him anywhere near the witness stand. We'll get to that in a minute. This is going to become unbelievable to some of our listeners. It was unbelievable to me when David Icke was telling me until I saw the documentation. Can't imagine what you felt like, John, when you found out she was dead. And again, you know, I don't want you to go in tiny detail talking about how you felt and all of that. We can't imagine it.
Yeah, it was awful, that's for sure.
So when you did find out, you were just told, I suppose you were told this story, right? Tiffany was unlucky. She was out. She was doing what she did. She was out. And she bumped into some people, got in with the wrong people, and they killed her. That's the way it was communicated to you, I guess.
That's right. And right when I called, they sent 10 police cars to the bar where Tiffany was. I believe now that it was the wrong police that went there. Otherwise, things would have been much different. But they sent one officer to me to question me about what I knew. And what was really odd about that, because, I mean, although I'm not a very well-educated person, I went to college for 3 years for criminal justice. So the first thing out of their mouth should have been, well, what did you do after you went to sleep that night? Because they didn't ever ask me what I did that night. The police, I mean, I guess I should have been a suspect. I mean, clearly they didn't know who the killers were for a while. But when the police came to talk to me, they never asked me anything that was logical. And the items that I had that were solid evidentiary clues, they had zero interest in copies of.
They would have wanted to know from you if they were doing their job. John, tell us a little bit about Tiffany's friends. Tell us a little bit about, is there anybody been in her life, John? Has there been an ex-boyfriend? Anything that was troubling her? All of these questions, you were ripe. Ripe is the word to be asked these questions because you were her recent romantic interest, her lover. They didn't ask you any of these questions.
No. In fact, the things that they did not ask, I forced them on the question. I said, well, you know, did you check this house? Did you do this? You know, and they just, I would later learn that their questioning was only to find out how to stop me from telling the truth.
Well, they wanted to find out what you knew. This is what you said to me on Monday.
That's right.
They were interrogating you, but not really interrogating you. What does this guy know? And this is serious. When they say, right, we're charging these three people, Michelle and Joshua and Daniel and Daniel. What motive did they attribute to the three of them? What did they say was the reason for the senseless murder of Tiffany?
Well, they never did. That's what's so crazy. And they never told anybody what the reason was. The excuse they gave was is that Tiffany said, shoot me. So they did.
Imagine. And I've read the reports, you see, and I read them again and again and again and again, spent nothing but the last 2 days reading them. and I cannot believe that a credible police force would behave in the way these guys did, but I know they did. We're not scared of libel here because we have the documentary evidence. This is the way they carried on. They wanted people to believe Tiffany met these people for the first time ever. These people were apparently happy people. They were getting married. They were selling a gun. They were going to use the money to have a shotgun wedding. No pun intended whatsoever. They were going to get married. No, I'm not saying that for a laugh. Yeah. You know, one of these Elvis Presley type wedding deals, I suppose, they were going to do. Everything was hunky-dory. But they met a woman outside a bar for the first time, asked her to join their party, and then blew her head off.
Yeah, that's right.
For no reason.
And in 19 minutes, because the key to that is that if you look at all their stuff, see, all these media outlets that are producing these results that you see on Google, they're not telling the truth. Tiffany met them, and in 19 minutes later, she was dead. That's all that matters.
Folks, it's exactly quarter to the top of the hour, 15 minutes to the top of the hour. John Captain III, I'm not going to say third anymore because it's difficult for me, John, with my Irish accent. John is on the line. This is serious stuff. He lost a woman he loved in 2013. She was murdered senselessly by a man along with two accomplices who were having a kind of a bachelor party. This is the official story. The police did no investigation whatsoever. They didn't want to hear what John had to say. And in fact, they concluded that, you know, ultimately Tiffany was asking for it. She had some sort of death wish or there was some sort of crazy, you know, situation going on. This is what they said. Now, she never knew them. She never knew them. The first time she ever saw them was at 1:43 a.m. outside the club. Before that, she never knew them. When did you know, my friend, that not only did she know them, but her family knew them?
Well, lucky or unlucky, whatever it is, Tiffany had a cell phone of mine, and it wasn't long after her murder that I recreated that cell phone. And that produced some results that were amazing for, I believe, mankind, really. I think that I really do think it's really key to the world's survival when they hear people, when they hear what she recorded for us as a society, so that we can put some people that are involved in what we're going to talk about in a minute.
She had a habit. Now, this is really important as well.
Yeah.
She had a habit of recording people. Unknowns to them. So she would meet people, her therapist, some of her friends, and she would record them. Now, I shouldn't editorialize. I really shouldn't be joining dots that might not be, you know, that might not join up naturally. But I formed a conclusion after reading all the documentation, John, is that this is an extremely bright woman, despite the demons that she's battling. And her habit of using the smartphone or the Apple phone to record people was because she was leaving a trail of evidence.
Yeah. Yeah, she was. And she had tried in 100 different ways to tell me who she was as a person. But when somebody that's drinking tells you, by the way, you have no idea who I am, and then you're like, been with them for a year, the last thing you're going to do is go, oh, not this again. But I didn't know who she was, and I didn't know what she was, and I didn't learn that until long after her murder. But, so I think that the next step in this thing should be that you play the clip of her knowing Josh.
This is really important, and I know that this is Josh because I've done my homework, but I need you to explain to the audience, after we hear the clip, how she knows this is Josh. Now, let me just I've got a couple of clips here. Do you know the one I'm going to play? Because this is extraordinary. This is Josh, who was going to get married to Michelle. This is him talking to Tiffany. And bizarrely, he's talking about ending his own life. And if he had a gun, he would do it. And he doesn't have a gun. And Tiffany speaks to him. Listen to this. And this proves beyond any doubt whatsoever John's contention that the police are lying and knowingly lying when they say she didn't know her killers. Right, bear with me a second, John. I've got them lined up, but I might need to increase the volume now. This is Tiffany and Josh. John might give us an idea of when this was recorded in a second. Listen to this conversation here.
I gotta go buy a new gun.
I'll never.
I threw mine off the bridge.
Good. You know, good. I'm glad. Hey.
I'm in a much stabler area than I was now, so I don't worry about having a firearm now. But then I was pretty unstable, so.
Josh, do me a favor. Don't ever kill yourself.
I'm in a much more stable place than I now. So there's no real worry if I have a gun. I'm not going to kill myself. Josh, do us a favor. Don't kill yourself.
Exactly.
How do you know that's Josh Robinette? How do we know this to be a fact? I know it, but explain it to our listeners.
Well, because of two reasons. One, he said the Josh meets Tony, which is where Tiffany lived. And of course, police never went to Tony's house, but without confusing it even more, there were several key things, including him knowing her father, because Tiffany says, "That's why you liked my dad. Remember what he said the night you met him?" So, and that recording was taken about 5 days based on the data, metadata inside the recording of iTunes or whatever, was about 5 days before she was killed.
Have a listen to this. This is where she talks about him knowing her father. Right, let me just play this now. There's so many. Hang on.
That's why you liked my dad. Remember what he wrote? I mean, the first night I met you? Mm-hmm. He said that some people just take some time and fucking write down your fucking principles and values and hold to them. And just hold to them.
So he knew her father, right?
According to the recordings, I didn't know. All I knew was is that nobody knew how she knew these people that killed her. Nobody. Nobody knew. The media made claims that she met him for the first time. And I'm going, she did not meet them for the first time. She told me she was going to die.
Not only that, but her cell phone had his number in it, didn't it?
Correct. But I didn't get any of those clues until 6 months after she was dead. So the audio recordings were gotten once I rebuilt my old cell phone that she had as an investigative move on my part. But when I did get the recordings and went to the police, boy, they were trying to figure out how to, you know, stop me from having them.
This is really important because along she didn't know any of these people. You knew, you found out that not only did she know them, but she had Josh Robinette's phone number in her cell phone.
Correct.
Tiffany had a habit of recording conversations with people. Which ordinarily you would think is a bit voyeuristic, maybe, and maybe that's a bad word, but you would think maybe it's a bit rude, it's a bit improper. But knowing what you've learned about Tiffany, you can understand why she was recording conversations with people. She knew Josh Robinette. Her father knew him. You take this information to the Portland police. What did they say to you?
I took it to the Oregon State Police, rather, which was, of course, the larger police department for the whole state. At this time, when I took the information to them, I still didn't know that their only reason for talking to me was to know what I knew so they could stop me. But I had a 2 or 3 hour conversation with the police officer, Oregon State Police, Dan Myers, and I told him everything I knew. But he said it's solved after we were done, right? He never called and told me what the plan was, but he originally said he couldn't believe his ears and then later said, well, we're not going to work on it anymore. His boss told him not to.
We're not going to work on it anymore. We have evidence that completely throws open the case of the murder of Tiffany Jenks again. It blows out of the water the notion that this was a random killing, you know, brought on by drunkenness and stupidity and foolishness. That's dismissed by the evidence you have, but they said, we're not going to go anywhere with it.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, clearly there was some form of a cover-up. I just couldn't understand why, because I never knew anybody to die in my life. So my experience with murder was zero, and my experience with death was zero. So those two compounding problems were at me nonstop. Although I was not willing to stop investigating the murder under any circumstance until it was solved. And I did not care one bit what the police said or what the media said or what anybody said, because I know shaking hands does not mean you met for the first time, and nobody can tell me that it does mean that.
When did you... It gets worse and worse, and I warned our listeners about this. I mean, talk about malfeasance, talk about corruption, talk about cynicism, talk about evil. And I'm talking about the police here, not just Michelle and Daniel and Joshua. When did you find out that CCTV footage showed these people casing your building?
Well, early on, and by the way, so I have a business that's connected to my house, and I have cameras that are outside, or a camera rather, outside my building. And, you know, I was reviewing the video of the night she died, and it was clear to me that these cars were circling the block. Now, even that form of proof, for instance, that the 2008 CTS Cadillac that was used in the murder went around my store and the gas station that's two doors down from me told me, John, the killers were sitting in our parking lot waiting for her that night. So if you have that form of evidence and the police don't use any of it, you start to think, what in the heck is going on here? You have the people that killed her sitting in the gas station waiting for her while she was at my house, and they don't care, the police? That's absurd.
And what was staggering about meeting you on Monday is you're this businessman, you've been successful in business, in several different businesses. Don't take this the wrong way now, John, but you're a very straight guy. You're a guy who would watch the evening news, you know, you'd be a good community guy, you'd be a good American, I suppose. You're not a guy you would have ever paid any attention to David Icke or Jim Mars or Michael Rivero. All of this sort of stuff is as far away from your life as could possibly be. That's important to note as well, because of where this story is going to go. So you have them casing your building, your place of work, and your house behind it. I've seen the footage, folks. All of it is on the Facebook page, Tiffany Jenks Murder. I've tweeted that out already. All of the evidence is there to show that these three people stalked Tiffany Jenks on the day she was murdered. And all the evidence points to the fact they were in town to murder this woman, right?
That's correct. And before I forget, and I really want to remind myself to tell you this, Tiffany Jenks was born and raised in the same place as those standoff in Oregon was, the one with the shooting, Burns, Oregon.
That's where she's from, Tiffany.
That's where she's from. The same corrupt town that has the, was it militia standoff in Oregon? That's where she's from.
And this is important as well. We're moving on to this now. It's exactly 3 minutes to the top of the hour, 2 minutes to the top of the hour. John is going to stay with us till the end. John Captain is on the line. Huge story in 2013, major story for Portland, Oregon. Beautiful young woman, Tiffany Jenks, is murdered. She hadn't been out of her job maybe a year. She had an incredibly prestigious job. She was a scientist in control of 21 dams on the Columbia River. Brainy woman. Massively responsible job. We're going to come back to that shortly, because that's got a lot to... There's a lot going on at her job as well, we believe. So we'll come back to that. She has a drink problem. There's nobody... You know, nobody's denied that. John hasn't denied that. She's been in therapy for it. We'll talk about that shortly as well. And, you know, there are times when she's with John. They love each other. They're living together. She's helping John in his business. There are times when the alcohol makes things heated and she says things that maybe she shouldn't say. And it's difficult for John. It's difficult for her. John says, and he said earlier on, that knowing what he knows now, he believes that she was trying to tell him something that she couldn't tell him. She believed that her life was in danger. She had a habit of recording people. She recorded her therapist. We'll talk about that in a second. She recorded Josh Robinette, one of her killers or an accomplice to her murder. Again, what we believe now, what John believes now, is that she was in the habit of doing that because she believed she was in danger. She was leaving a chain of evidence. She was murdered on the night, or on the day, or on the morning of October 13th. October 8th, 2013. That's right. At 2:30 a.m., having met the three people we've mentioned, at 1:43 a.m. outside a nightclub, the police saying they'd never met before. This was a chance encounter. John has gone to the police and said, well, hang on a second. She knew these people. She had some of their phone numbers in her phone. She spoke with Josh Robinette regularly. We've got him on tape speaking to her. He knew her father, who passed away back in 2010, meaning they knew each other quite a while. Not only that, but John was able to see video evidence of these people casing his business, which was attached to his house. CCTV footage, it's all there. It's all on Tiffany Jenks' Facebook page. So you weren't letting this go then. I mean, you can't believe this, right? The police, here's all the evidence you need to open this investigation again. But the police are saying, no, we're not interested. But you didn't give up. How did you not give up? What did you do from there, John?
Well, first of all, I would say that the police were fed up with me. I would not stop. I went to every jurisdiction, every Department of Justice, FBI. But I was learning as I went along. And it was about, I would say, 6 months after the murder that I was in a restaurant eating. And I heard a guy next to me at the booth talking about having a radio show. And I chimed in and said, hey, what's your radio show? And he said, well, it's Clyde Lewis, Ground Zero. And I proceeded to ask him, hey, can I ask you some questions about something? And I played for him some audio that Tiffany had recorded that was quite, well, first of all, I had no idea what it was, period. I had never heard of this crap, and it did not make any sense to me talking about things that you guys talk about all the time. But clearly, the information that she was taught or that I was providing him was of interest because his eyes were just in amazement. He's like, where did you get this? And I said, well, Tiffany died and she recorded her therapist and her and he was beside himself to have heard what he heard that day in the recordings that Tiffany had recorded with her therapist.
What was going on in those sessions with her therapist, John?
Well, I knew it was something disturbing right off the bat because he starts off the question. He says, why do you want me to give you a death wish? And they're talking about dark angels and talking about death wishes and that sort of thing, something I was not knowledgeable about. So throughout the recording with her therapist, Jonathan, downtown Portland, she was telling him that she was going to die. And he was telling her, nobody's controlling you but you. But then shortly after that, all of a sudden you hear some key words that, you know, people in the mind control industry and yourself and David Icke know all about, which is follow the yellow brick road. Well, when I first heard the stuff, I was like, what the heck is this, you know, nonsense? So I had no knowledge of ever in my life, have I heard of mind control? Have I heard of the Illuminati? Have I heard of anything of this such at all? Zero. So when I heard it, I didn't know. And Clyde Lewis listened to it and his mouth dropped. And that night on his radio show, he did a show about Tiffany and, you know, explained that, you know, here's this girl that was killed. She had a very important job running the dams and that here was this stuff that she said during the recordings, and he hypnotized her. Tap, 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 follow the Elbrick Road.
Do you want me to play that now?
Yeah,
it's going to be very difficult now for our audience to hear it.
Yeah, well, I'll say it after you. Afterwards.
Brilliant. I'm going to play it. I'm going to turn it up to be Jesus, right? Try and hear this. Right, let's just play it and shut up. stand by, John. Let's play this clip here, right? Let's hope. This is not great because she had the phone in her pocket, folks. But this is her with her therapist. Listen.
Tiffany. If you knew who you were from when you were young, it would not be a good thing.
I do, but I didn't. I was alone, and I got alone this morning.
I'm sure you do.
I'm not alone like I was. You're a dark angel?
I don't think I'm a dark angel.
I don't think I'm a dark angel.
It doesn't matter.
She made me...
What was going on there?
Okay, so in that clip in the first part, it's tap, 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 tap. And he's putting her into a, you know, mental state of trance, basically. And then throughout the recording, as she's coming out, and that's just a snippet of it, but it says, "You think I'm a dark angel? I think you're a dark angel." In the recordings, she makes it very clear to him that she's in love with me. And he says, "Well, whatever this fella tells you, disregard." And she says to him, "Why do you say that? He can save the world." So clearly, which I was really happy to get that part, but certainly I can't save the world. But I was glad to find out that Tiffany was in love with me as much as I was in love with her. But what was disturbing most about, I mean, it was all disturbing, of course, but he gives her a death wish. He talks to her about, you know, the dams, and she says a lot of people are going to die. And
stop right there, because this is serious, right?
Yeah.
Because we're getting to the crux of it now. We're getting to, you know, her job. A lot of people are going to die. You believe that she believed something was going to happen at her place of work, or that she might have believed that, or that she might have believed that something was going to happen, you know, that was going to be made to look like an accident, but might have had catastrophic consequences for people. Is that right? Well, is it fair to say that?
Richie, she didn't allude to that in the recording, and she never told me the exact, like what you're saying, but what she did say was a lot of people are going to die. She didn't say into what context. And in the recordings, which, you know, most of them are constantly being put up on the internet, which is great, by the way, she says, of course, that she's under mind control. And in these recordings, he says, well, the only one controlling you is you. And then he puts her into this trance, you know, tap, 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 follow the Elbrick Road. Well, anybody can Google follow the Elbrick Road in the occult, but and come up with the programming codes for the Illuminati. But taking it one step further, after I had the radio conversation with Clyde Lewis, the next day, I was all on the internet trying to find out about the Illuminati, because at the end of the show that he did on the radio, the Clyde Lewis gentleman I met, he told me, "Why didn't you tell me she was Illuminati?" And at this time, I still didn't know what Illuminati was. I never heard of it. I thought it was a cartoon. And so at the end of that night, I was searching for the Illuminati, and Clyde Lewis told me about the mind control stuff because of the recordings. And then it was becoming real. So the next day I met Clyde Lewis, and in fact, I had a gentleman that's a very lifelong friend of mine from the UK, from London actually, who was emailing me, "John, you're crazy. There's no possible way what you're telling me is true." So I brought him to America, his name's Dave, and I brought him to America for a month to review, to see if I was just losing it, and say, "Here's Tiffany. She didn't die this way, but here's, look at all the facts." And by the time he left, he knew for sure that the story is true, that Tiffany is a monarch slave for the New World Order.
And I'm going to vouch for what John said about Tiffany claiming that she was under mind control. She did say that. All the audio is available. It's very difficult, that audio. And one or two of our listeners have been saying, you know, "Richie, with your audio equipment, can you clean it up?" Well, I was using Cool Edit Pro over the last couple of days, and I can't really clean that up, really. You've just got to listen. And when you listen hard and you shut everything out, you can hear exactly what's being said. You know, dark angels, as John said earlier on with this therapist. What's going on with the therapist, John? What do you think his role in all of this is?
Well, I believe that first and foremost, he knew she was going to die because she flat out told him. She said, "They want to kill me." Okay, so he had a moral and legal obligation in Oregon to come forward to the police and tell them that Tiffany was going to die. She died 4 or 5 days after their recording was made. So If Jonathan wants to be a therapist in downtown Portland, and by the way, Richie, I had shared with you specifically how I know for sure who it is. So there's no question in my mind in terms of who the therapist is that helped her to die. And if you have a therapist that programs you to die, and here's the example when I say this. He said under while she was hypnotized, you'll get the answers when you die. That's like a leading question. It's our leading answer. He's telling her she will get the answers when she dies.
John, I'm not just playing the devil's advocate here.
Yes,
it's my job to.
Yeah.
But when I say this, I'm actually not playing the devil's advocate. I'm not sure that that it's a given that he was in some way trying to expedite her downfall. You know, we'll get the answers when we die. That's a kind of it's a philosophical thing to say, isn't it? You know,
we'll all
know when we die. And maybe, I mean, to be fair to the therapist, he's not here to defend himself, but he might say, listen, Tiffany might have been mind controlled, but how the hell do I know? She was saying these things to me and I was humouring her, trying to get more information from her. But I certainly had nothing to do with it. That's what he would say, right?
Yeah, and that's a fair statement. The bigger part of it is, though, is that he told her when she claimed to him that she was going to die, he said, that's the problem. Don't tell anybody who you are, because if you do, it will make you a target, and targets get shot at first. Now, I'm not saying that he's responsible, because obviously the killer is responsible. But in Oregon, we have rules that say when you have somebody that's suicidal or somebody that's going to, you know, that tells you that they're going to die, there are triggers that you're supposed to, or things you're supposed to do in Oregon under law as a medical provider to ensure that that person doesn't die. Because in four times she says she's going to die.
And of course, the mention of the yellow brick road, of course, is a big red flag there for anybody who knows anything about monarch-controlled mind slaves. It's exactly, folks, 11 minutes past the hour. John Captain is on the line to us live. He was in the UK on Monday. He's not there now. I met him on Monday. He met David Icke in New Zealand a few weeks ago. His girlfriend was murdered on October 8, 2013. At 1:43 a.m. outside a nightclub, she met three people. Less than 45 minutes later, or just over 45 minutes later, she was dead. The police said that these people came into town for a bachelor party. They were going to sell a gun. Two of them were going to sell a gun to the third member of the gang. The money was going to be used for a wedding. Tiffany was unlucky. She got into a car. Hijinks. Lots to drink. Lots of idiocy. She asked them to kill her, and they killed her, and there you go. The killer, the guy who pulled the trigger, is in prison for 18 years. The other two, Michelle and Joshua, well, they're out because they did a deal with the prosecutor, and they are out of prison now. John found out that not only did she know them, she knew them intimately. She knew Joshua Robinett intimately. She had regular conversations with him. It's on the phone. She recorded stuff. He knew her father as well. They spent a lot of time on the day that Tiffany was murdered hanging out around John's place of business and John's home, which are connected. Do you think, John, that you were in line to be bumped off as well on the same day? Do you think you had an escape?
I have no reason to believe that, but I've heard that many times. I don't know.
Right. We're talking about monarch mind control. And this is something Tiffany said. She said it in therapy. Now, her place of work. Now, I wasn't trying to give our listeners the impression. We were speculating when Tiffany said a lot of people are going to die. Because of the nature of the job Tiffany used to do, we were speculating that maybe a lot of people are going to die meant that maybe she felt that something was going to happen at her old place of work, but it doesn't necessarily mean that. Could have been anything. However, she spoke to you at some length, didn't she, about something that, as bright as she was, she didn't understand, and that was insider trading.
Yeah, it was.
This is vital. This is a massive clue
to well, I mean, it's a billion-dollar cover-up, and it's never been told in the public ever. According to Tiffany, and she told me this, and we had this discussion 10 times, and being that I've never been in her office, I don't know, you know, all the details of it, but we specifically talked about it 10 times, where she said that in her job, she would write down numbers that correlated to the raise and lowering of the dams, which, I mean, do some deductive reasoning, that also controls the volume of water. And she would write this number on a piece of paper and pass it through a window. And on the other side of the window, there were these three people, men and women, that she was not allowed to talk to. And these three men and women would trade day trade. And I said, Tiffany, that's insider trading. And she's like, well, no, it's not, because I'm not allowed to talk to them. I said, I don't care if you're allowed to talk to them or not. It's insider trading. And so, you know, I get the idea that there's some bigger picture in this world going on with money and 9/11 and insider trading at the dams. And it's almost like all of us are really just working really hard so that they make all the money. Because here Tiffany is telling me that they're doing insider trading in a billion-dollar company in Oregon, and a multi-billion rather, and we taxpayers and ratepayers of the power in California, where David Icke is now, California, Washington, Oregon, Nevada, it's all getting their power from Bonneville Power Administration. And if what she told me is true, and I have no reason to believe she lied, they are insider trading in their facility, in their office. And that is highly legal.
Now, of course, we have no way to substantiate that at all.
No,
we're not accusing them of anything. It might sound like we are, but we're not. We're saying this is what Tiffany was saying. She was saying that she passed information about activity at the 21 dams, information that is very useful to somebody who's making trades and making bets, and that they would do that. And, you know, but of course, not being able to follow that up, to see, first of all, was it really happening? And if it was, what sort of money was being made? But again, it's the sort of thing, John, that the authorities in Oregon should be jumping all over.
Sure.
It's a serious lead. If somebody was worried about Tiffany spilling the beans on somebody else making an enormous amount of money because of illegal insider trading, it's very important to put that on the table.
Yes. And, you know, in regards to Tiffany's murder, there is no way in heck that the people, I mean, as you know, because we played the audio, but more importantly, I mean, here you have the story that the police gave, and nobody in their right mind could ever believe any of the story. But the narrative as it goes is so far-fetched that it doesn't matter if you remove all of what we've talked about tonight, Richie, if you just ask yourself the simple question, did she meet them and die in 19 minutes? Yes. That's all that matters. The rest of the stuff is a moot point. Tiffany died in 19 minutes, and that is not the narrative that the police are giving. That's not what the courts did. And by the way, Richie, there was no court. They had no trial, and the only people that were in the court that were allowed to go were pro-die Tiffany people. Here's the example. You had five people listed as witnesses. Three of them were the killers. One of them was dead. That was Tiffany. Why she was listed, I have no idea. And me. And I was excluded from court. So if the five people all want them to get go, or, you know, I was excluded, that left nobody to have a trial for anyways.
Nobody.
So the notion, yeah.
This is, it's going to get worse, dear listener, because there's an element to this which is spooky, it's sickening, it's disgusting, but it's got to be mentioned. I know it's hearsay, but it's going to be said anyway because it's in the public record. Jesus, this, it gets so deep, this. When these people were arrested, Daniel and Michelle and Joshua, Daniel Brunel, what did he say in his statement to the police about Joshua and Michelle and the young daughter? And I said way back, we would come back to the young daughter left in the motel. They left the daughter in the motel. Then he went off to stalk Tiffany. What did Brunel mention in his statement? What did he claim happened when they went back to the hotel?
Well, I would like to say that, you know, even though he is the killer, he was the only one that told the truth in the whole thing. If you read his deposition to the police or his interview, he was honest throughout the whole thing. It was the police that lied about everything. So, I mean, for all I care, let that guy out. And let's get the real killers that paid the money to get him in jail. But what he said was, is that when he went back to the hotel after he killed Tiffany, that Josh and Michelle were having sex with the child in the room, and he began to get sick. He went to the bathroom and got sick because he couldn't believe his eyes that they were having sex on top of the kid.
He didn't try. He didn't try to stop them, right?
No, he did not.
He didn't try to stop them.
He said he got sick and he went to the other in the bathroom and puked. But this was only his testimony that was given upon his arrest. And in addition to that, he was caught with $7,000 cash in his pocket. And Joshua had a pile, an envelope full of money, too. But they didn't, you know, of course, he didn't tell us how much. But
Joshua had a pile of money. So did Daniel. And Joshua's pile of money, again, contradicts the story that they needed to sell a gun in order to have the money.
Hey, that's true. I didn't think about that.
To have their wedding that I, very in poor taste earlier on, called a shotgun wedding, which I didn't
mean. By the
way,
they never paid for the gun. It was a promissory note.
Oh, I'm so glad you remember that.
Because it couldn't be any stupider. But I think, just stepping back for a second, what's the real issue? Here's the real issue, okay? Forget everything we've said. What I'm trying to tell people is this, that there's 10 police in Portland, that the media is lying to everybody, period, because they are, and that there's a bigger story about Tiffany's murder that they do not want you to know. And so when I went to my government, Oregon State Police and the like, you know, the higher up Department of Justice, which I played for you the recording with him, they did not care about any facts of her murder. They only wanted to find out how to stop me from being able to tell the public the truth about the murder. Now, in my investigation, all the facts that I had, I put forth thinking that they were going to help me with this investigation. I had no clue that then it would end up them trying to stop me each step of the way. But keep in mind, the entire problem here is, here you have this shooting in Oregon about the gentleman, in the Oregon standoff. And they got 5 years for, what, burning the grass? And Tiffany's killers got out in 13 months.
Yeah, they did a deal with the prosecutor and they got out in 13 months. John Captain on the line.
They never got charged with murder.
They were never charged with murder.
They never did. And that's why, see, it's my contention that the DA, the judge, the police, they're all in this cult together.
Now, they might very well be, and I can understand why you think that. It could also be the case, though, that some very powerful people are just influencing them. You and I spoke on Monday in your hotel room about Scotland Yard retired detectives telling Exaro News in the UK that when they were investigating serious historic child abuse in Britain, that they were often stonewalled from above, John. They were told from above, hey, listen, quit it now. You're not going any further with this. So it could be the case with the police and with the judge. You know what I mean?
Yeah, sure. And the thing is, there was no trial, period. They got out. They did not charge him with murder, even though they killed her, their gun, their, you know, the whole story. They took off the serial numbers that day to kill her.
They did, and we didn't really dwell on that. They removed the serial number of the gun. These scumbags removed the serial number of the gun. Not only that, but they made the ludicrous claim that they didn't hear the shots that killed Tiffany, even though, John, you showed me evidence that a ballistics expert said they would need to be nearly 3 miles away not to hear it.
Yeah, that's right. When the two, I call it Josh and Michelle, see, they are involved in this murder way more than Daniel Burnell, who's the actual trigger puller. But he was set up too, the guy who pulled the trigger. But Josh and Michelle said, we didn't hear the gun go off. Well, it's a little bit difficult at 2:30 in the morning in the middle of nowhere to not hear a .357 gun go off. You'd have to run 3 miles.
A .357, yeah. It's one of the loudest. It's one of the most violent guns.
But it's not possible to run 3 miles because that gunshot went off at 2:30 a.m., which would have bit into their 19 minutes. And based on the fastest runners in the world, it takes like 6 minutes to run a mile or 3 minutes.
So there's not enough time. They couldn't put you anywhere near the stand, could they?
First of all, I was excluded from the courtroom. I have about 100 solid clues. And keep in mind, this is not my story. This is Tiffany. She met them. They shot her. She's dead. And I have all the evidence to prove it. The rest of the stuff and the he said, she said crap doesn't matter. Yes, the doctor gave her a death wish. And yes, she knew Josh. And he said that he was going to go buy a gun. And yes, Tiffany was worried somebody's going to kill her. But if you go back to the bigger picture here is you've got 10 Fairview, Oregon State Police, and so on. You've got 10 government officials who don't care that there's a dead girl. And worse than that, you've got a therapist working downtown giving out death wishes for a fee.
Yeah, I mean, when he talks about on the audio, it is, again, he's not here to defend himself. And, the thing to do, of course, is to drop him, from our point of view, to drop him a line and ask him to talk on the record about it. But, of course, he's not going to. That doesn't mean that we won't drop him a line and ask him
Richie,
to talk about it.
I offered from $5,000, $10,000, and $50,000 for specific people in this murder, being the people that were involved in the investigation, of cash money, if they would go in a public venue for 3 hours and let me question them, that I would make a donation to our local charity in Portland, the Nara Indian Health Clinic, because I'm Native American. But the bottom line is this. I made an offer to the district attorney's office that I will make this donation in cash money if they will come and let me ask them specific questions about Tiffany's murder. And, of course, nobody's willing to.
What's really disturbing is when Daniel claimed to the police that when they went back to the hotel, they raped Michelle's 9-year-old daughter, 9 at the time she was, that they weren't questioned about that and nobody examined the child, right?
That's not true. They did get questioned about it, and Joshua Robinette, I believe, served a year or two extra after killing Tiffany for that part of the crime. But
so they were found guilty of...
Listen, the bottom line,
child
Rich,
rape,
is this,
right?
Is this. If you're 9, 10, 11, whatever they claim her to be, your life is ruined in some regards. As any rape victim knows, your life is affected forever. So don't tell me that this Joshua Robinette gentleman who raped a child should, be out on the streets already, and this girl will be subjected to the thoughts of that for the rest of her life.
Michelle and Joshua were handling Daniel, weren't they? They were his handlers.
I don't know the exact formation of how their group worked, but clearly the shooter, Daniel Brunell, told the truth. When you read his report, and by the way, I'd like to tell your listeners, because they're probably a lot smarter than me, that the police all along the way have taken me to court over and over again to stop me from getting public document requests in Washington and Oregon State both, where I was the only person that cared that Tiffany was dead and that they were lying. But each step of the way, like when I wanted to get the audio recordings, they denied me, and then they took me to court to stop me. And this was after it was a solved murder. Now, in Washington State, we have laws that say you must give them the documents in a public document request. Of course, they don't. And so what I have to do, I have to take him to court. It becomes ridiculous that taxpayers have spent $500,000 and Michelle Warden-Brosy and Joshua Robinette got a $200 fine and health insurance and got let out of jail.
I want to turn back to something that was mentioned earlier on, because we're talking about mind control. We're talking about monarch mind control.
Yes.
You talked about the estranged relationship that Tiffany had with her mother and sister, the difficult relationship, I should say. Maybe she wasn't estranged from them, but she wasn't welcome at the house. We've established that. And there was some sort of an altercation at one time where the police were called when Tiffany showed up, and Tiffany ended up spending a bit of time in prison. Now, it was during that time, if I remember earlier on in our conversation, John, that her mother mentioned rapes to Tiffany. Rapes. When yes. when was Tiffany raped? Was Tiffany harmed when she was younger? Do we suspect that things happened to her when she was a kid? Yeah.
Yeah, Tiffany had told me all about it, and I'm not going to go into it, but she certainly did. And also, she wrote to me about it as well, and I retain those recordings or those writings, those letters that she sent me. But clearly, Tiffany had been raped. There's no question, and nobody denies that. And the only reason, Richie, that you and I even bring it up is because out of respect for the others that have been raped in life, so that they know that we care about that issue. I mean, what's so frustrating about the idea that the people who raped this girl in the hotel room, for instance, get out of jail with a $200 fine? Anybody that's been through a rape, traumatic rape, or rapes in plural, knows this is not just get over it, okay? So when Tiffany was put into jail and nobody went to go see her, nobody put a $20 worth of on her books so she could eat in jail for a month, her mom shows up, drops off her shoes, and tells her just simply, get over your rapes. That's a clear sign that something's wrong in a relationship. Because I'll tell you what, that would be about the last time I would talk to my mother if indeed my mom told me to get over my rape. And clearly, I highly doubt her mother was raped, because people that have been, they don't think it's funny.
No, they don't. And I want to mention at this point that 10 days or so ago, Christine J. Hart was on this program talking about monarch mind control, and how when Christine came out of the Catholic school for girls, home for girls that she was living in, she ended up going to work for a private investigator. That private investigator's firm was actually owned. It was part of the commercial wing of MI6, the famous British intelligence agency. Christine ended up going to work for MI6 as kind of a honey trap, whereby she would meet with various diplomats and captains of industry, romance them, wine and dine them, and get secrets from them and pass them on. And she talked about the trauma of, you know, being sexually assaulted when she was a kid as well. You see, this is what staggers me, John, when we do these programs and we get these totally unconnected stories, in terms of the people are completely unconnected, the characters, I shouldn't say characters, but the, you know, the persons of interest in these stories have no connection whatsoever, but their stories are eerily similar.
Yeah. I want to add, Richie, that oddly enough, of course, you know, I said that I didn't understand any of this for a good 8 months after she was dead, about mind control or the Illuminati or any of this. But I told you when we met in person that they had sent people in to befriend me. So here I'm having these people that, oh, hey, John, nice to meet you and you become my friend. And I didn't have a clue that there were these monarch slaves. In fact, I never did tell the story about how I learned that Tiffany was a monarch slave. But right after the radio show that they had done about Tiffany that night, and he told me she was Illuminati, and then the next day I was searching around for help, and I ran across Fritz Bingmeyer, who had told me, yes, I could come to his house. He lives in Portland, Oregon, where I live. I took all my computers and all my recordings and to him, and in 15 minutes he said, John, she's Illuminati. She's in the she's a monarch slave. And I was like, well, what the heck is that? So that's how I learned she was a monarch slave, because he read some of her trigger things like gatekeeper, time stopper, fallen angel, all these keywords, which there's a whole bunch more. I won't say them all. But there were all these key components to the monarch slave programming that he clearly knew right away. And then he handed me his book. And I'll tell you, Richie, between him, you, listening to your show, the guests, like you said, from Canada, I forgot her name, they have really, you, that David Icke, and you have really opened a lot of people's eyes. And if I didn't have a way to find out what happened to Tiffany and that she was a monarch slave, I would still be going crazy, because I do take, I am happy that I at least realize now what happened was because of her monarch slave programming, and not because of a failed relationship between me and her, because I would have felt even more guilty than I already did, you know?
What I've come to believe from reading this, you know, your story, and from listening to David, and I've known David a few years now, and initially when I first began to talk to David on the radio, I was very reluctant to talk about these things because I thought they were fantasy, really. I thought that in many cases, you know, these people might have had some very negative interaction with authority of some kind or another, and it might have triggered some, you know, bad feelings in them and hurt them health-wise, but I didn't see any mind control or any programs.
Sure.
I think differently now, of course.
You mean years ago when you first started?
Years ago when I first started.
Yes.
Now what I...
And I mean, yeah. I think it's important, I at least I would like to tell you that Kathy O'Brien and Mark Phillips, who also had emailed me and told me to, you know, some things that were very helpful, they have really changed the world forever. And a lot of people ask me what it is my goal is. I think my goal is, of course, to get justice for Tiffany, if that's even possible in today's world. But more importantly, I want other monarch slaves to someday have a way to get out of what they're in before they die, like Tiffany. So collectively, as listeners of your show and DavidIke.com as well, it's important that we come up with solutions to these problems. Putting Tiffany and her horror story aside, there are thousands of monarch slaves throughout the world, and I'll be damned if people one after another go, that's crazy. Yeah, well, you know what? JFK and why he was killed and all these, you know, Kathy O'Brien, Cisco Wheeler, all of the Sylvia, you know, tons of them. But my point is, and they sent more in to try to handle me after Tiffany died to find out what I was doing. And like I told you before, one of them in particular told me about her getting raped beginning at age 3. And I personally find it both disgusting and unacceptable that our government is allowing this to happen. And heck, another 20,000 will be right behind the 20,000 that probably exist in the world today, or even more. I don't know how many you think there are, but certainly it's disgusting.
John, we're going to take a very quick break. When we come back, I've got a question for you, and then we'll have about 10 more minutes, and we'll have to leave it. But when we come back, we're going to try and define for our listeners who don't have any understanding of this what a monarch slave is, how children are targeted, and the reasons why they're targeted. Stay with us, John. John Captain is on the line to us, and he's been talking about what happened to his girlfriend Tiffany Jenks, who was murdered on October 8th, 2013. One of the more staggering stories I've heard in my years in radio. I'll be back with you in exactly 60 seconds.
Do you want to release the full potential of your soul consciousness and find out how to experience that power in all areas of your life now? Go to livingasyoursoul.com for free guidance with in-depth how-to articles, free healing meditations of creation recordings, free soul solutions, and much, much more. Livingasyoursoul.com, making the profound practical.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk. Now.
Welcome back. 22 minutes to the top of the hour. Should have taken a break way before that, but I've absolutely been gripped listening to John Captain talking about the murder of Tiffany Jenks. Go to facebook.com and put Tiffany Jenks murder in there and you'll find John's page there. Everything is on there. All the audio clips, YouTube videos, all the documentation that backs up what he says, particularly about the conduct and the behaviour of the police in the state of Oregon. John, what I've come to understand is that children have been and are being targeted at a very young age, and they're being psychologically broken down and destroyed through sexual abuse, ritualistic sexual abuse, sometimes satanic ritualistic abuse and torture. And I've come to understand that there's a number of reasons for this, which I'm not going to get into all of them now, but one of them is to shape that child, to use them at some stage in their later years in their teen years, in their late teens, in their 20s, in their 30s, for whatever, to strategically place those people in places of power sometimes. Like we were speaking with Christina last week, you know, getting her doing stuff for MI6 and stuff like that. But these people, John, are, and I'm giving a very, very loose now description of what I understand it to be, they're disposable people. And the system that has created them through the, you know, mind control, through the sexual abuse and torture, is happy to just spit them up and get rid of them whenever they want to get rid of them. And they often use other kids whom have been targeted the same way. And I would suspect, having read all your documentation, read all the news reports about Josh Robinette and about Michelle, is it Broden Worsley or Worsley? I have to conclude, even though I could be wrong, they were also subject to the same mind control experimentation or treatment as Tiffany. Certainly it looks like Daniel Brunel was. What do you think?
Yeah, well, I don't know about Daniel, but the other two for sure, I believe for sure that they were. And I think it's the bigger picture and the full circle of it all. You've got crooked police helping crooked stories so that they never get in trouble. And what's unique about Tiffany's story is, to value her life, she has to get justice. So I don't care what the police say. I don't care what the judge said. I don't care what the media said. Until she gets justice, which is to take the 50 clues and go, wait a minute now, she knew them. Okay, she knew them. Now that we know that, it's called murder, or conspiracy to commit murder, more importantly. But clearly the idea of a monarch slave being used in any, first of all, the creation of it is absurd. But America will learn about the entire monarch slave system once Tiffany's case becomes part of the courts, because out of every single time when somebody gets lucky enough like this to have this much of a plethora of information or of evidence, they get washed out, right? Nobody is able to complete it. If Tiffany gets justice, America and the world will learn that MKUltra program, whatever name you want to give it today, monarch slave, is real. Because, of course, you know, 20% of the country or of the world probably says, oh, that's just the most crazy thing in the world. And then the rest doesn't know. And then there's like 10% of us that probably now believe it to be true for sure around the world. But once you look at Tiffany Jenks' case and you hear her doctor give her death wish and tell her to follow the Olympic Road.
And dark angels
you're
and
pretty
all of
much,
that.
Yeah, dark angels, and you'll get the answers when you die and all these different things. Why are they covering this murder up? Why? Why specifically Tiffany Jenks? Why did she work at the dams?
She was obviously very intelligent. Is it possible that when somebody who's being targeted, like we think Tiffany was, when they start to realise it themselves, because not all of monarch-controlled kids will ever realise what happened to them. Most of them probably don't, and they live their lives however long.
I'd like to say something about that, Richie.
Can I just finish that question, because it's important?
Yeah, go ahead.
Do you think that might be why she was murdered, because she began to understand?
Yes, without a question. Her dad died in 2010. He then would have been her handler. They were trying to keep her on pills, like I showed you before. She had $192,000 in medical for suicides and pills the 12 months prior to me meeting her. That I have proof of, because I paid the bill.
Staggering amount of money.
Not the health bill. She had her insurance. But I had paid a bill for Thailand. But my point is, she had $192,000 in medical for suicides and pills the year prior to me meeting her. So when you put this entire picture into perspective, this isn't about Tiffany in the end. This will change the way other monarch slaves can come forward, because there will be an avenue for them to prove their case to the world. And right now, if you're a monarch and you're living with demons in your head, you don't know what to do. So you're in this vicious circle of prostitution, sex, drugs, and demons.
In the short time we have left, John, where do you go from? It's obvious to me from meeting you on Monday, and you know, meeting somebody in the flesh, as it were, and speaking to them and chatting with them, you get a real sense of them, much more, I suppose, than you do if you haven't met them and you just talk to them on the radio. You're obviously somebody, you've got a massive heart, I think. You're a very bright guy.
you obviously loved her very dearly. And despite the problems that she had, you looked after her and you cared for her. Where do you go from here? You said yourself that getting these people to admit what they did and acknowledge that they deliberately skewed and screwed up the investigation is unlikely. So what do you want to happen? What would you like to happen? You know, in the absence of any acknowledgement by the state, what else can you do, or what would you like to see?
Yeah, well, I think that first and foremost, Richie, you're helping to achieve these goals I have, and so is David Icke. Getting the world to understand that America is not what we think it is first. But what I would like to see happen is I would like to create a resource for other monarchs to not die. I think that would be the best Tiffany thing that anybody could ever do. And I think that there are thousands and thousands and thousands of other monarchs who have been, they've had enough in life where they don't deserve any more abuse. And these police that didn't give Tiffany justice are the reason, because nobody can ever go up against these criminal police. So what would my goal be? I would like to find a way before I, before I am gone in life, like we all go, but I would like to find a way to have a resource center where they can go online and they can research every single thing they need to and get help, because nobody touches monarch slaves. They all just get to die or go into a psycho ward.
A lot of comments about this on Twitter. Many of the questions being asked on Twitter, I've been putting to John anyway. There was no need to read them. People can go to Twitter, put Richie Allen Show, all one word, in, and they will be able to see what people were saying. A lot of people are understanding it. It isn't the first time they've heard of it, but there's a lot of people staggered by what they're hearing about the circumstances surrounding the death of Tiffany. I've had a negative email, which I'm just going to read because we don't censor anybody. Somebody called David Hill has suggested to me that I check my metadata, because apparently he suspects that there's been a massive switch off. Nobody in Europe will give a damn about a Canadian dam controller who got murdered.
She's not from Canada.
Canada anyway, so the guy's stupid as well as, I shouldn't call him stupid. Keep the guests you have on your program, deaf as well as stupid, keep the guests you have on your program relative to the stories that will have a direct interest and relevance to your listeners. While I was reading that and while John was chatting, I had a very quick look at the metadata. There's been no drop off in listenership to this program, because what John Captain is talking about, the murder of Tiffany Jenks, is absolutely relevant to my listeners in Europe and in England, especially those who heard Christine J. Hart from the News of the World talk about this 10 days ago. It's relevant to everybody. Children are being raped, tortured, victimized, brutalized the world over, and a lot of it has got to do with this. Very surprised at that email.
It's okay.
I love these idiots. You know, if you don't like it, switch the fuck off. It's as simple as that. Don't worry about anybody else and whether they're liking it or not. Yeah. What do you want our listeners to do? You want them to go to the Facebook page, obviously, Tiffany Jenks Murder, right?
I'm not trying to get anything from anybody. I'm just trying to raise awareness. And I'm thankful that you and David Icke are doing that, because 2 years ago, I learned of this for the first time. So I'm new to it also. But also, I'd like to tell people that if they want to get more information or like to get, you know, documents about it, they can go to the Tiffany Jenks Murder Facebook or TiffanyJenks.com and get information that way.
Stay in touch with us, John, right?
Yes, sir. Thank you for the show.
No. Thanks for getting in touch with David in New Zealand. And thanks for coming on. A number of people have told me tonight that what's really staggering is how credible you are, because you're a straight guy. That's not to suggest you're a dull guy or a boring guy. You understand what they mean. You're a regular guy, a businessman, a taxpayer, somebody who never heard of any of this or conspiracies. You weren't interested in any of that until it kind of landed smack bang in the middle of your face, and then you were confronted by it. And I can understand why that's important to people. I'm terribly sorry, John. You know, it might not sound sincere, but I really am, for what happened to Tiffany and others like her, and what happened to you, because you know, you loved her. I mean, she was beautiful. She was intelligent. She had everything, really. And it was, her death was wrongful in every sense of the word. The way the police in your state have behaved is criminal. It's criminal. At the very least, it's criminal.
Yes, sir.
And I just want to wish you the best. And any time there's any update on it, any time you want to come back on the show and talk to us about it, you need only pick up the phone and we'll have you back on.
I appreciate it. I appreciate your listeners listening.
Look after yourself.
Thanks, Richie.
Cheers, John. Bye for now. John Captain on the line to us there. Not in England today. He left the country yesterday. I don't know where he is. I suppose, not that I'm in any position to give anybody any advice, but without fear-mongering, I did say to him, you know, keep an eye on yourself. Be careful about where you go and let people know where you are at all times and stuff like that. 10 minutes to the top of the hour. Very quick break. Back with more in a minute.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
Do you want to release the full potential of your soul consciousness and find out how to experience that power in all areas of your life now? Go to livingasyoursoul.com for free guidance with in-depth how-to articles, free healing meditations of creation recordings, free soul solutions, and much, much more. Livingasyoursoul.com, making the profound practical.
This is one of the reasons, you see, they keep screwing up the historic child sex abuse inquiry in the UK. This is why Theresa May, when she was Home Secretary, appointed Elizabeth Butler Sloss and Fiona Wolfe to head up the inquiry, because they were establishment women connected to people whom are and were suspected of committing grievous crimes against children. Justice Lowell Goddard has waddled off back to New Zealand. Not doing it. Can't do it. She's gone. Made her apologies. Personal reasons. And you're left with a vacuum then. You know, we've had people like Michael Shrimpton on the programme. And society dismisses Michael as a crackpot. Michael is mad. Talks about the Germans all the time. Crazy former barrister, got into prison, got into trouble and went to prison for talking about bombs at the London Olympics. It's all very neat. But anybody who's read Spy Hunter by Michael Shrimpton, anybody who's known Michael Shrimpton as long as I have, will know he's incredibly intelligent. Has been connected to the intelligence services for years. Verifiably. Talks about the extent of child torture and murder by establishment figures in this country. The Biggest Secret by David Icke, 1998. It's all there. Catalogued. All the men and women who came to David over the years to say I was abused and my abuser was incredibly well known. And this slave state, this monarch mind-controlled or control even slave state, has a lot to do with it. Might not always be the intention. There are other intentions when children are raped in the way that children have been raped and are being raped by establishment figures, by royalty, by politicians, by the captains of industry. There's no doubt in my mind there are a number of reasons. David talks about it in great detail in his books, in his recent books, The Perception, Deception and Phantom Self, the reasons why children are targeted like this. But creating soldiers of a type, like we heard from Christine J. Hart on the programme, this is one of the reasons. It may very well be the reason why Tiffany Jenks was targeted in the way that it seems that she was. terrible thing to happen to anybody, and a terrible thing for John Captain to be dealing with. And I would recommend that you go to Facebook and look for Tiffany Jenks murder and have a look at the documentation yourself. Make your own mind up as to whether or not he's right to make the assertions that he makes, to draw the conclusions that he does. I'm convinced, having read it and having listened to the audio that he provided me with on Monday, and even before that, that this woman was murdered, that people in very powerful positions knew why she was murdered and how she was murdered, and did what they needed to do, which I don't think was very much, sadly. They don't have to work very hard to do it, but did what they needed to do to prevent any investigation, despite all the evidence being out there that she knew this guy, Josh Robinette, knew him well. His number was in her phone, for Jesus' sake. She'd recorded them talking. He knew her father. She was raped at some stage. She talked about insider trading at the business she worked at. She talked about lots of people going to die. She said time and time again, "I'm going to die, they're going to kill me." On the day she was murdered, she said it. But the Oregon authorities would believe you, would have you believe, "Nothing to see here, please disperse, move on. She was just unlucky." That's it for the programme. Thanks for listening to it. Brian Rothery is on the programme tomorrow. Field McConnell is on the programme. And we will squeeze in for a few minutes the wonderful Tina Louise Rothery, because there's a big protest, a big gathering happening in London at the weekend. Tina wants to talk about that. So we'll have a packed programme tomorrow from 8 p.m. BST. It's going to be a good one. And the television programme returns on Friday. I'll be at, of course, BVTV Studios with Hayden Hewitt on Friday, and we'll bring you a brand new TV show as well. A big thanks to my team, to Claire, to Simon, to Aaron, and to my mate Jean Ann Crowley for advice and for help as well. Often solicited and never denied, it must be said, never denied by Jean Ann. So I'm going to leave you and love you then with Counting Crows. I think I've got Counting Crows, indeed I do, lined up. I say I think because I didn't know, I can't read it from here, but I think it is, yeah. I need to get new glasses. Thanks for listening to the programme. Big thanks to John Captain. Look after yourselves and one another. I'll see you tomorrow. Bye for now. They paid paradise and put up a fucking lie, with a pink hotel, a boutique, and a swinging hot spot. Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you got till it's gone? They paid paradise and put up a fucking lie. You don't know what you got till it's gone.